to me. Oh, whoa,
I despise. Live from New York City, it's the Gary Knoll Show. And now, your host, Gary Knoll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. Today, a study from the Xinjiang Medical University in China about pulmonary metastasis of breast cancer is prevented by a component found in safflower. And about 16 other good quality studies from major institutions, all from peer-reviewed literature, to let us live a longer and healthier life. Then we're going to take some calls from people in the audience, and we have a number that people can call in. It's called our voicemail line. You can leave a statement about something you've heard that you would like to express your opinion on, or you can ask a question. The number is 862-800-6805, 862-800-6805. Or if you're busy and you're working and you only have a little bit of time at night, and okay, let's see what Gary was up to today, go to the archives. One phone call, and you can download five programs. One phone call, 701-719-9976, 701-719-9976. We're also going to have a just brand new voicemail from Dr. Joseph Mercola today. Why? Because he is the latest person to get slammed by Google to where they're not allowing you to really see anything of him. Sayer G and GreenMed Info, that happened a couple weeks ago. And it looks like everybody in the alternative field they're going after. So we're going to go after them. Monday's program, please let everyone you know hear it because it's going to be a classic. I have finished it. I finished it this morning, and it's in the hands of our scholars and legal team to make sure it's properly vetted, because any article I do on the air, our goal is you could take it into a court of law and use it, and it would withstand cross-examination or expert scrutiny. And that's why it's tools to help you. Also today, I have a guest in the second part of our program to talk just about this. He is probably the world's leading authority on Google and other social media's manipulation of our lives, Dr. Robert Epstein. Dr. Epstein is the senior research psychologist at the American Institute for Behavioral Research and Technology. The Institute researches roles of parenting and stress management and maturation and the Internet's influence and manipulation of our lives. He is the former editor-in-chief of Psychology Today, and he holds a doctorate from Harvard. He's also been a professor at the University of California, San Diego, and he was the founder of the Cambridge Center for Behavioral Studies, Massachusetts. He's a heavyweight, and he's the author of 15 books, so we're going to have him on. Then on Monday, I have the most comprehensive, in-depth article ever written, and hence will be broadcast and posted, about Facebook, Google, and Wikipedia. And that's all I'm going to say. You'll have to tune in, and hopefully you will. Later today, I'll give you the latest update on what we're doing to fight back. Aside from five lawsuits, the latest word is that today that Assemblyperson Richard Gottfried says a bill to repeal the religious exemption to New York school vaccination requirements will be considered as of yesterday by the Health Committee, and he expects a floor vote in the New York Assembly next week. The bill has the support, by the way, because of all of the work that everyone's been doing. For example, we have sent four separate award-winning documentaries, including the most important, which is front and center on our page, and you all should watch it. There is absolutely no excuse not to watch this documentary so you're well-informed, because they go into the bad science, the bad politics, who's being paid to vote a certain way, the stupidity of the bills that are mandating these when there's no science supporting their safety and efficacy. And so watch Deadly Deception. But we gave thousands of copies to activists to get it in their hands. Also, we gave 53 articles we've written on vaccines to members of the legislature. So now, if everyone begins to call members of the New York Assembly, your representatives in Albany, and let them know you're not going to vote for them if they don't rescind this religious exemption. Anyone else who wants to line up and get their shots, that's their business and their right. We don't challenge that. But to mandate something means the government controls your body, what goes into it. But they are not responsible, nor the makers of vaccines, if what they put in is a poison and there's adverse effects, including death. And that's exactly what's happening. So good news if you become active. Now, here's the catch-22. And it's not a rhetorical statement I'm making. It is just a pragmatic statement. If you weren't concerned up to this point about anything going on in society at all and never showed up for any of the demonstrations, not even the anti-vax demonstrations, but now that it's your kid that can't go to school and you could be visited by Child Protective Services and be charged as an unfit parent or abusive parent, now suddenly you're raising hell. Well, where was your hell raising before? Why is it only just a tiny fragment of society that ever stands up and speaks? Separate issue to discuss. So either you raise hell and call today, or this effort will fail. But at least a lot of people have been doing a lot of work to get this up again so that we can have some, let's say, a response to the fascism occurring in the legislation. So, I think that's very good news. Now, in a study, researchers at the medical university, Chinese Medical University, investigated the effects of safflower yellow. That's the active component in a plant on the pulmonary metastasis of breast cancer and its mechanism of action. The results of their study was published in the American Journal of Chinese Medicine, a major peer-reviewed journal. And let me give you the spelling of it. It's the letter C, which stands for carthamus, C-A-R-T-H-A-M-U-S, tinctorius, T-I-N-C-T-O-R-I-U-S, or safflower is a traditional Chinese medicine that activates blood circulation and dissipates blood status. And it's extensively used as an anti-tumor treatment in clinical settings as part of an overall formulation. But there's a lot of evidence that it has very strong anti-cancer activity. And this research showed that it did and was very specific, and it was published. So just, again, we want to put every piece to the puzzle that we can when it comes to disease. From the University of the Pacific comes a study published in the Journal of Alternative and Complementary Medicine about what effect does oral aloe vera have on diabetes. Now, this was a meta-analysis of studies where they gather all these studies together and they examine the epidemiologically, the methodology, and the outcomes to see is there a correlation. Let's say you have 15 studies and 13 of the 15 studies show that by taking a certain amount of vitamin C, you can lessen the duration of a cold or flu. That's important. If you only had one study, that is not considered scientifically confirmatory. It is of interest and may be completely valid, but the more of these studies that come up with the same results using the same methods, the better it is. And that's why this is important. And a lot of people use aloe vera. I use aloe vera, and this shows that it really can help people with diabetes and pre-diabetes. Now, you're dealing with 100 million Americans when you put those two figures together. When they take the oral aloe vera, it was associated with a significant decrease in both fasting blood glucose levels and hemoglobin A1C. And the data indicate that people with FBG, 200 milligrams per deciliter, can benefit the most. And that's very, very important. So in lay language, what does this mean? It means you can reduce your fasting blood glucose level and you can impact your hemoglobin A1C level using 2 ounces, just drink it, That's according to this meta-analysis. Now, a little background, just as an aside. I was curious about all these companies around the United States making aloe vera and various claims for it. There was one company out of Arizona that seemed to be the number one in the country. And so I spoke with a person, I got him on the phone, and what makes your aloe so special? And he gave me his pitch on it, and I took notes. And each company, and the one thing I didn't ask them, and I realized, are you growing this in the United States organically? So I called them all back, and suddenly that became a question that nobody wanted to answer. But one fellow did. He says, no, I don't grow it. I bring it in from the Dominican Republic, and we bottle it here. Have you ever gone down there? Have you ever been to the Dominican Republic to see how they grow things? Nope. Shouldn't you? Should, but don't have the time. So my brothers, myself, there were about five of us, we took a trip to the Dominican Republic. Some photographs of that are up on the website. And we went way out of the main city and the capital. We went up into the mountains. And what you notice is that once you get into the mountains at the higher altitudes, and it's not really high, but high for there, everything looks like a moonscape. It's very bleak. And we came to this big enclosure, went inside, and they thought that we were buyers, potential buyers who had come down to inspect it. And what was the first thing you saw was this just gigantic airplane hangar with a dirt floor. And it looked like cash register checkout counters, there were like 10 of them. And beside each one of these counters was a big 55-gallon drum and a guy with a souffling knife, like a fish souffling knife. And the aloe would be brought in and dumped on the ground. And these guys would pick it up and souffle it. The skin would be thrown away, and then the aloe vera gel would be put into these tubs, and then they would just pour in. I'm watching just pour in discriminately these preservatives. And then I went into the fields, and I'm watching as some young fella had a DDT pack on his back, banned in the United States, but he's sitting there spraying flies, and he was just playing using the DDT spray as if it were water. And it's splashing all over his legs and feet, and he's barefooted, nothing protecting his legs. And I'm thinking, wow. So they're using stuff banned in the United States here. And there was no standard of quality. Way old, that should have been discarded, and young and immature, all were used. So that taught me a big lesson, you know, that don't believe what the bottle says or the advertising, because it may not be what's in the bottle. And hence, the only aloe I believe people should be using is whole leaf aloe, because then the science shows that the mucopolysaccharides, the really beneficial nutrients, and there are over 200 different things aloe vera can do in your body. It's just one of the 10 most important, perfect substances you can put in your body. It's not just the gel. And yet most of what's sold is the gel. And try to get it organically grown in the United States. In any case, aloe vera is good. And what I did not find out by reading the study is, was it the whole leaf or just the gel? And still they got anti-diabetic effects, bringing down the blood sugar. And by the way, Michael, who I'll bring on the air at some point, when he called and wanted to see would I help him out, his fasting blood sugar was 300. Today it's 88. That shows you what's possible without meds if you make all the changes you need to. From Monash University in Australia comes a study about stress, that stress leads to rapid spread of cancer. Well, many of us have seen that, which is one of the reasons you should not talk about cancer in any morbid or fatalistic manner when you're around people with cancer. In fact, I never talk about cancer with people I'm helping who have cancer. Never, never mention the word. Instead, focus upon positive things, things you love doing, things you would like to do, you know, if time was on your side. And how do we put time on your side? How do we get you into a better mindset where you're not looking at loss and the end of things and And in our society, we have an epidemic of sadness. And understandably so, when people had their life planned out and then they were honoring the protocols given to them by their religion, by their social leaders, by society, and then one day everything goes sideways. You know, what happened? Well, divorce happens. Children happen. Careers end, especially today. And what if you're not ready for the next transition? What if you've not been helped to get into the next transition? What do you do? In fact, I was recently speaking with someone, and they were asking me about a project that I'm doing. I'm doing several projects right now. Hopefully, we'll have them done by the fall. One is getting a home for homeless vets, and also the first holistic assisted living center in America to prove that people can go into an assisted living center, reverse their aging, and come back out and no longer need either a nursing home or assisted living center. They're years younger biologically. And until you do it, no one's going to believe it, so I'm going to do it. Because I've certainly done it with enough people, but I want an actual clinical study. In any case, so person's saying, why are you doing that? That doesn't make any sense. I don't do anything now. I'm not. And I said, why? What do you mean? But hey, after 50, and certainly after 60, nobody should be planning anything because you could die. In fact, the person said, yeah, you could die right in the middle of a project. I said, hold on a second. You are aware, aren't you, that every single person alive today on the planet, all 7.7 billion, will pass and someone else will be living in their home or apartment, driving their cars, or in some way benefiting from what they had left behind. Why is that a bad thing? Everything has an expiration date. You shouldn't be morbid about it, and we can extend that expiration date. I just did a four-hour webinar this past Sunday and we were packed. I want to thank all the people from Spain and everywhere else that was on the line, because they want to learn how to live a longer life and be healthy without disease. But yeah, there's an expiration date. Does that mean you have to stop living, stop creating, stop challenging yourself? Not at all. Just to the contrary. Think of what you don't have after the age of 50 that you had earlier in life. You don't have all the responsibilities you had for a career, a family, mortgages, and responsibilities. If you've lived prudently, and I hope that you have, then you don't have all that debt and all those responsibilities, and therefore you're free to make the choices. And unless I'm mistaken, none of you listening right now have to be any place the rest of your life. So shouldn't you look at where you'd like to be and find the places that are joyful? And that's one of the things I do when I'm working with people with very serious and almost always terminal illness, at least with the Orthodox medical model, getting to believe in life again, become optimistic and enthusiastic. And, you know, it's something when you have someone who's been told they got 3 months to live and you're talking with them about starting a new project that they should start. And all your energy's into that. In any case, that's one of the things that we can learn from, that stress, the stress of aging, the stress of being alone, the stress of separation, the stress when something leaves our life, a friend. Life doesn't end. We go through an appropriate and proper mourning. We put our energy on the best that relationship was and remember the highlights, the remarkable moments. That stays with us forever. And then we go forward. And that is one of the reasons that this Monash University study is so important. Because stress of living, stress of relationships, if it can cause cancer to spread, it could cause cancer. And it's also causing heart disease. We can literally say that we were overworked, and in Japan they actually have a word for overworking yourself to death. And there now is a movement in Japan among many workers, and it is called 12-6, or 6-12, meaning 6 days a week, 12 hours a day, they have to work. That does not include their commute, which sometimes can be an hour and a half each way, because the cities are too crowded and too expensive. So that means your entire life is spent working for a corporation that doesn't give a damn about you. So freeing yourself from stress is one of the most important things you can do in life. Also, from Capital Norman University in China and Rice University in the United States, published in the Journal of Chinese Medicine, traditional Chinese exercise therapy is found to be effective treatment for depression and improves glucose levels and diabetes. That's terrific. And that is Tai Chi. And we should be doing it. Also, they have about 1.3 million Americans suffer from rheumatoid arthritis, minimally. And that's the most common form of arthritis. So the idea is, should you take vitamin D? And the answer is yes. According to this article in PLOS One, there's a big difference when you're deficient in vitamin D, and that can correlate with rheumatoid arthritis. So take your vitamin D every day. And if you want better cognition, better memory, make sure you're getting your vitamin B12 and folate, and it'll also lower your homocysteine status. And that was a retrospective study from the Center for Diagnosis and Treatment of Cognitive Disorders in Italy. So take your B12, 1 milligram of methylated. Take folic acid, 1 milligram methylated. B6, 50 milligrams, 25 to 50 milligrams. Vitamin C, 1,000 to 3,000 milligrams a day. And trimethylglycine, you can bring down your homocysteine level, because homocysteine, when it's up there around 17, 18, 19, whoa, that's when you can have a heart attack or stroke. And it's a silent killer. So you want to make sure that you're keeping your homocysteine level down. And from North American Menopause Society, published in Menopause, aerobic exercise and cardiovascular disease in women with fatty liver disease, meaning the more you exercise, the less cardiovascular disease. The more you exercise, the less fatty liver disease. So the two of them are very important. And for those of you suffering from the progression of chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, COPD, a new study from the University of Fundan, which is in China, shows that NAC, N-acetylcysteine, can make a huge difference, 1,200 milligrams in divided doses. They compared this with a placebo for 6 months, made a big difference. And I'll save for another show, helicopter parents hovering may have negative effects as kids transition to adulthood, Florida State University. I'll get into this because I want to do a whole commentary on what happens when you just mess too much in your kid's life. There's no room for a kid to make their own decisions, right or wrong. You got to control everything, and that's what helicopter parents do. It's not just in high school or junior high school. They stay attached, unfortunately. That's the latest on health and healing. We're 23 minutes into our program. We're going to take a break and come right back to your questions. And then, after that, we'll probably go to our guest. I'm going to give him extra time today because we're going to play this clip by Mercola leading into it. Since virtually all of the important and progressive forums are being closed down or they're being limited so nobody even knows they exist. And by the way, one thing to think about, in these debates, and I don't tell people who's winning or losing or who did good or bad, there's 12 debates, and so this is just the beginning, and you'll make up your own mind. Unfortunately, none of the independent candidates will you be hearing, the Green Party candidate, the Justice candidate, the constitutional candidates, because they don't have the money, nor do they have the opportunity to get into the system. But why were there no questions asked concerning America supporting Saudi Arabia and United Arab Emirates and Great Britain and France in killing men, women, and children in Yemen? Yes, it was a dramatic picture of a father and daughter drowned. And any parent would have felt that. Anyone who's not a parent should have felt that. It's just empathy for people who are suffered. And didn't have to. Our whole system of bringing people in this country is flawed, and both parties have recognized, and both have said it. But neither one is doing anything because they don't want to give any political capital to the other person. It's just stupid. But not a word said when you have 20,000 children who have died or are starving to death in Yemen. Yeah. Why don't you take a look at people who have survived concentration camps? There are lots of pictures. And see what a concentration camp person looks like. And they were lucky, because 6 million of them didn't survive. And why was there no discussion of trying to weaponize and politicize everything? Everything. It's vile. So we can care, as we should, about a child being taken away from their parents or not allowed into the country, but we're not looking at the larger picture, and we politicize it all, and a child dying suddenly becomes a political opportunity to attack the person that they're going to claim caused that. Well, what about them and Hillary Clinton and the Democrats and Obama and all the dead children in Syria and in Yemen right now and in Libya? Do they not count? Is a child of color in the Middle East not the equivalent of a child in the United States dying? I think that people should get their priorities straight and stop being hypocritical. If you're going to be for children, be for all children. If you're going to be for freedom, be for freedom. If you're going to be for the integrity of how to deal with people except by arms and threats and invasions and regime change, then understand what you are. You're a warmonger. You're a killer. You're vile. And that's why I have nothing to do with the Democrats or Republicans, and I won't allow them on this program, because I don't allow people to come in and to spit forth their venom. They got all the media they need out there to do that. But just remember, take a look at the children in Yemen who are hours away from death, and ask yourself, isn't that a violation also? And isn't that the United States? And aren't those taxpayers? We're confused about something. Let's get over this confusion right here and right now, forever. There is no such thing as government funding. That does not exist. It's an oxymoron. It does not exist. Every single dollar in America comes from the taxpayers, or we're ultimately responsible no matter where the money was borrowed from or printed out of thin air by the Fed or the Treasury and created a shift, sifted through bonds. It is the taxpayer responsible for every dollar, every debt. Then why don't we act like it's our money and we don't want it spent on the military-industrial complex? We don't want it spent on supporting the socialization of losses by protecting all of the energy cartels, big oil and nuclear and Shell. Yet we won't support a local farmer who's growing organic produce, but we will an industrial farmer. Do you see how screwed up we are? We're really not looking at issues appropriately and properly and thoroughly. So it doesn't surprise me when someone doesn't want to look at a kid who's dying, and there's a million other kids in Yemen who are dying, and thousands have died from our drones, where we've actually killed them. Barack Obama actually killed children, and yet he's hailed as a great person. Hillary Clinton killed children and innocent women. Since when does a woman's life not matter, or suddenly she has no voice, or we don't believe in her, or we don't support her when she's in Syria, or she is in Libya, or she's in now she's in the poorest nation in the Middle East, in Yemen. And there are tens of thousands killed by the United States, by Bill Clinton, Hillary Clinton, Yugoslavia. Since when do these people's lives not matter? Since when do we not even include them in our discussions? That's something that concerns me. Back in a moment with your questions. Please stay with us.
Shining, there's plenty of light. A new day is dawning, sunny and bright. But after I've been crying all night.
Yes, my question is, if you had a dog, would you spayed or neuter the dog? And also in California, they won't give you a dog license unless you get a rabies shot. The other day you said that it wasn't good to get vaccines to the dog destroys their immune system. That was my question. If you had a dog, would you spay and neuter, and would you give a rabies shot to get the licenses in any way around it here in California and Orange County? Thank you.
Yes, I would spay a dog, have spayed dogs. I don't believe the dog should be bred. There are plenty of dogs, between dogs and cats, over 250 million plus, so there's no shortage. And the same is true for cats. And because I help rescue and bring back to love and comfort and health thousands of animals of all types, nilgai, elk, camels, giraffes, zebras, squirrels, you name the animal, I've worked with them. The goal is not to see them procreate. Now, where animal is going extinct, there are appropriate centers and wildlife refugees that have breeding programs to keep the species alive. With a dog, that's not what we're talking about. And so, yes, the spaying. Now, concerning vaccines, the veterinary industry is absolutely as immoral and corrupt as the traditional medical community when it comes to vaccination. And if you want to kill your pet, over-vaccinate them. In fact, they keep bringing, bring your pet in, we've got all these vaccines. Show me the science. Just ask them that. Give me the peer-reviewed science that shows that giving these particular vaccines will make a difference. Now, it is true, no shelter or no place that sells animals can sell it without a rabies vaccine. But a rabies vaccine, the titer should be measured, and most animals are never put, unless they're a wild dog, are put into a place where they're going to come into contact with a rabid animal, unless it's a wild rabid raccoon. But these are rare. And so there is a method, and I'm going to try to get the person to come out of the closet and go on the air, even anonymously, a veterinarian who will give a vaccine, but then immediately will neutralize the adverse effects of the vaccine. There are methods to this. So that will come only when that person wants to go forward and tell us that. But I can't tell you how hard it is, but it is possible. When your dog is suffering from adverse effects from the vaccine, you have to do a whole detoxification process. But I don't have time today to do that, but I will do that and have a holistic vet on who will discuss this. Okay? Let's take another one.
Hi, Gary. Enjoy your program. I was inquiring about a couple of things. I was wanting to know something about cordyceps, the herb cordyceps. And I wanted to know, in the movie Awakening, the Oliver Sacks, about him, that was in the movie with Robin Williams, that L-DOPA, is that another name for vitamin C? Could you have used that vitamin C drips instead of L-DOPA, or what would have been equivalent to it? What would you suggest today for that condition, sleeping sickness, they said? Okay, thank you again for your program. Bye-bye.
Okay, no, there is no association between L-DOPA and vitamin C. L-DOPA, that's D-O-P-A, is a precursor to dopamine, also norepinephrine and adrenaline. And that passes 10 blood-brain barrier. It passes the 10 blood-brain barrier and then taken up by the dopamine-associated neurons that convert L-DOPA to dopamine. And dopamine itself can't cross the blood-brain barrier. An amino acid that the body synthesizes from L-tyrosine. And there's some evidence that improves learning and memory rather than impairs it. But there's a lot of adverse effects. And most are related to psychological conditions. It can cause nausea, disturbed respiration, GI bleeding and hair loss and disorientation and confusion and extreme mood swings and anxiety and insomnia, auditory and visual hallucinations and narcolepsy and stimulate psychosis. And some plants contain natural L-DOPA. Actually, all plants in one family, it's F-A-B-A-C-E-A-E family, which also contains the beans and the peas and fava beans. So, but that's separate from what you had asked about cordyceps. I don't know why you're bringing the two issues together, because cordyceps is a fungus that lives on certain caterpillars in the high mountain regions of China, Nepal, and Tibet. And natural cordyceps, that's C-O-R-D-Y-C-E-P-S, are difficult to find and very expensive. And most supplements are made with cordyceps grown in a laboratory. And not a great deal of research on cordyceps is around, at least in English. Almost everything comes out of China. And the folk healers or the Himalayan regions area that use cordyceps, it's regularly used to treat cancer, asthma, tuberculosis, and diabetes, and colds, and erectile dysfunction in men, and BHP in women, and hepatitis and liver and renal problems. And cordyceps effects on the renal and hepatic function and immunomodulatory related anti-tumor activities are very promising. So I'm happy about that. And the strongest research seems to be for cordyceps reversing drug-related damage to the kidneys, and like taking some chemotherapy, like cyclosporin. And studies have shown that it does improve sex drive, and taken for about 30 days. And there's, I believe it was out of Johns Hopkins, that cordyceps has benefit on cognitive impairment. And that's good. And there was lots of research on its anti-cancer effects on ovarian cells. So that's what I would say on that. We're out of time for that. And I want to get my guest on. But before we go to a guest, and I give in his bio just a moment ago, I want to play a little bit of what just came on today on Google, where Google buries Mercola in their latest search engine uptake. And why is this important? Because Joseph Mercola is a medical doctor. He's board certified. I know Joe. In fact, I filmed him some time ago in San Francisco for a film, and he was kind enough to put drugging of our children, unbeknownst to me, up on his website. Like, it went to number one on Google. Of all the movies on Google, over 1 million people downloaded it. That was years ago, about 12 years ago. Now, Joe and I are completely different on our dietary approaches. That's fine, because there are other things we could certainly agree upon. But keeping people from knowing about Joseph Mercola, who is not afraid to put out information about things that can help us or things that hurt us, is not right. And that's what Google is doing, not just to them, but SARG over GreenMed Info. And they're challenging, like Facebook and Google are now challenging, you know, countercurrents. And really good truth dig, where Chris Hedges, about 100 different sites, and that's not right. So we're going to hear just a few minutes of Google bearing Mercola and what this means to the rest of us. Then we'll go to our guest for an analysis.
What I'm about to tell you may sound shocking, but it is essential you listen very carefully, as it may be the most important information I've ever shared with you. It's crucial for you to be able to take control of your health. So what's this all about? It's about information and your right to access it. You see, over the years, the biggest library in the world has been concentrated at one single source. And can you guess what that is? Google. And unfortunately, Google has recently removed almost all of my content from their search results, as I've been consistently critical of them and many of their top advertisers and partners, like the pharmaceutical and chemical industries. Google worked for many years to earn your trust, but it was just setting a trap to twist that trust into powerful control. Google had the brilliant idea of utilizing crowdsourcing to provide you with the best answers to your questions, pushing the most frequently selected content to the top of the search results. And that was truly a democratic and powerful system to reward people for sharing information and helping you locate the information that was most valuable to you by essentially sharing the most popular, highest quality content. And my information was frequently at the top of hundreds of different search terms in Google because people like you found it to be valuable. But as Google's power grew enormously, the goal of providing this service to you has changed. That goal is now to become even more powerful by uniting with other powerful industries and the government to force their beliefs on the masses and control the future so they can benefit from it. Crowdsourcing has become crowd control. Google began giving you everything you want so it can now take everything you have. Google has changed from looking at their users as customers and giving them what they want to making us custodians to their will. Google has become the ultimate puppet master, infecting people and manipulating them without them even knowing it. The true goal is to be in complete control of us, directing our behavior. And should we rebel? They also have partnered with the military, and I know that sounds hard to believe, but I can assure you they've created drones utilizing artificial intelligence to ensure resistance will be defeated. This is, of course, eerily reminiscent of many dystopian science fiction books and movies. We have proof of precisely what Google is doing, and we cannot go along with it. Google refers to their goal of controlling humanity is the selfish ledger, and there's more information on the article we wrote. Our lives are being exploited by Google and other large tech companies, and you have no idea how far they have come or where they are going. They can predict and control your behavior to their advantage. Google has now become a site that censors information that is in the best interest of their primary customers, and in case you are wondering, that is not you. They now serve that which is in their best interest, and that is their advertisers. In other words, whatever makes them the most money. The end result is a massive suppression of truth. And
now, that's only part of a nine-minute interview or nine-minute commentary he did. Let's go over and say hello to Dr. Robert Epstein, and I've given his bio at the beginning. Nice to have you with us today.
Well, thank you, Dr. Null. It's a pleasure.
You have quite a history of struggle with Google in the past and have accused the Silicon Valley giant of manipulating searches favoring the Democrats during the 2016 election. You've also written that Google operates, quote, a fundamentally deceptive business model, end quote. And I'm especially interested in having our listeners understand just how much control Google has on people's experiences on the Internet and their access to reliable information and the efforts Google makes to intrude and manipulate our lives. And I believe Facebook does the same, and so do certain other factions within Wikipedia that have strong corporate conflicts of interest or ideological conflicts of interest, particularly in the field of medicine and alternative health. Also, our own research finds that Google and Wikipedia have a very close relationship. Google has provided Wikipedia with over $7 million and shares their algorithmic technology with Wikipedia editors, who are supposed to be independent volunteers not employed by Wikipedia Foundation. But I'd like to begin with you describing the underlying deceit in Google's business model and give us an idea of what's its ultimate mission. The forum is yours.
Okay, great. Well, first of all, just for the record, I've never had any struggles with Google. I did get interested in Google from a research perspective. I've been a researcher for almost 40 years. And I did get interested in them almost 7 years ago now, and started to conduct randomized controlled experiments at this point with tens of thousands of people covering five national elections and many different topics to see what kind of power they have to shift people's opinions. And I thought I would find that they have, you know, some power, that they could shift opinions by, you know, 2 or 3% maybe in an election, maybe even shift voting preferences. But the very first experiment that I ran, and again, these are double-blind, randomized, controlled, counterbalanced experiments. I mean, they're absolutely flawless in design. The very first experiment I conducted, I found I got a shift among undecided voters of 48%. Second experiment, I got 63%. So that led to a paper I published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, which has since been accessed or downloaded more than 200,000 times, which is very unusual for a scientific piece. And it's led to a whole body of research now and discoveries about all kinds of methods that Google, and to some extent other companies, but mainly Google, are using every single day to impact the attitudes, beliefs, opinions, purchases, voting preferences of more than 2.5 billion people around the world. And among other findings from this large body of research is that virtually no one can tell that they're being influenced by these new methods of manipulation that Google has invented. Virtually no one can see that they're being manipulated, which is very, very dangerous, of course, because people think they've made up their own mind. Even worse, these techniques that Google uses don't leave a paper trail for authorities to trace. So, you know, that's very disturbing, especially when you think about, flipping elections without people knowing. So, as I say, at this point, there's a pretty large body of research, and there are a number of effects I've discovered. The first one was called SEME, S-E-M-E, the Search Engine Manipulation Effect. That just shows that if you favor one candidate or one cause in search results, that has a dramatic impact on people's thinking and behavior, and they can't see it. They can't see that. They can't see the bias in the material they're being shown. Another bizarre finding from the research is the very few people who can see that there is some bias in what Google is showing them, they shift even farther in the direction of the bias. So being able to spot the bias doesn't protect you from the bias. Search suggestions, now I have a whole body of research just on the suggestions they make when you start to type a search term. And they are manipulating you from the very first character you type. And I've shown in experiments that by manipulating search suggestions, you can turn a 50-50 split among undecided voters into a 90-10 split with no one knowing. So I could go on and on here. I just want to say regarding Mercola that I did my own check on this morning. And indeed, as Dr. Mercola was saying, indeed, there has been an enormous shift in traffic to Mercola coming from Google. Now, you know, there used to be a lot of people coming from Google to Mercola, and at this point I double-checked because there are ways to do that online. And, in fact, they're now getting virtually no traffic from Google. So Google really demoted them, and, of course, they do this every single day, affecting many, many businesses and many individuals. Literally, we're talking about millions, not thousands, but millions. And so, yes, Mercola really has gotten onto one of their blacklists, and I've written about those. I did a big investigative piece for U.S. News and World Report, which your listeners can find, called The New Censorship, and I explain in detail how these blacklists work. And, you know, I think Google at this point is something we have to take another look at, and we should all be extremely concerned about how they operate. We should be concerned about their business model, which is basically a surveillance model, because they have no real products. We are their products. I mean, what they do is surveillance, and how they make their money is by monetizing the information they've collected. So Google isn't really Google. Google is what I call GSA, Google Surveillance and Advertising. And I will be testifying before Congress in just about 2 weeks about some of the research findings that I've accumulated over the years. So people are taking this new body of research quite seriously, and they should, because Google is scary.
If a person or organization pushes the wrong buttons with Google, for example, publicly criticizing Google or its practices, clear the company as the technological means to retaliate. I have no doubt it has the means to influence Wikipedia or other companies to portray critics in a bad light. Do you have any information or evidence on how Google has the means to damage a person or their reputation or credentials or professional success?
Well, sure. I mean, at one point they erased me. Now they put me back. I think because again, I'm a fairly accomplished scientist, and they're my work gets a lot of attention in the scientific community. So they did eventually put me back. But the point is, they do a number of things to make people disappear. And they do this for all kinds of reasons. They do it to make money, of course, but they also do it because they want to spread certain kinds of values throughout the world, and their values of their company. And we know this from leaks from the company. In fact, Dr. Mercoli even mentioned a very creepy video that leaked out of Google about a year and a half ago called The Selfish Ledger. I would encourage people to look that up online. You won't be able to get it on YouTube, of course, because Google owns YouTube. But you can get it online, and it's an 8-minute video, an internal video made at Google that talks about their plans to engineer humanity in a way that matches their values. So, they can impact people. They are impacting people every day in all kinds of ways. They can demote you in search results, which makes you disappear. They can delist you, which means you are disappeared. You're gone. They can remove you from YouTube or place restrictions on YouTube for whether people can access you. Just Monday, you may have heard about a new set of leaks from the company that are extremely disturbing about their plans to basically to control the outcome of the 2020 presidential election. And the organization that reported those leaks, Project Veritas, they posted a 25-minute video on YouTube, which is owned by Google, and that started to go viral on Monday, and by Monday night, Google/YouTube removed the video. So in this big piece, as I say, that I published called The New Censorship in U.S. News and World Report, I talk about 9 different methods that Google uses to suppress information. People are just generally unaware that this is occurring because, of course, you don't know what you don't know. That's the problem with censorship.
My final question is, what can be done? Google is a gargantuan behemoth on the Internet. People are not even aware that its parent company, Alphabet, has also founded 2 pharmaceutical companies and deeply tied to many private industries, including the military-industrial complex and the Pentagon, the Defense Department. So this monster is not going to disappear. But are there any ways for people to challenge it? And also, it goes before Congress and says it's not doing what the proof is that it is doing, but then Congress doesn't really sanction it anyway. Your thoughts?
Yes, well, you're right about Congress. Congress has been fairly useless in taking on Google, and that is simply because Google supports Democrats, and I totally sympathize with that. I'm not a conservative, but it's because Google supports Democrats not only by getting them votes, but by giving them lots of money, and Republicans generally don't like regulation. So far, our leaders have not been very helpful. The EU, though, has been more aggressive. And so, in the last 2 years alone, Google has been fined a total of more than $8 billion by EU authorities. And that process is continuing in Europe, and that could make a difference. But basically, we can't count on our authorities for much help, unfortunately, because this company is so powerful. There are things as individuals, though, that we can do to protect ourselves from their surveillance and to make, our Internet experience, much more secure and more private. And so if your listeners go to my website, mysevensimplesteps.com, they can get access to an article in which I summarize very simple ways in which you can change the way you use the Internet, alternatives to Google.com, for example, that are quite good, alternatives to Gmail, alternatives to Google's Chrome browser, So if you go to my7simplesteps.com, you can learn all about that. And people who might want to learn more about my research or support my research, they can go to mygoogleresearch.com, mygoogleresearch.com.
There's also a film called The Creepy Line, which I'm recommending people see as well. And just
that is a superb film, and it covers a lot of my research, and it is excellent. I recommend it very highly. It's on iTunes. It's also on Amazon, and it's free for Amazon Prime members to watch.
By the way, last year, the National Academy of Sciences ranked your institute's paper about the search engine manipulation effect in the top 1% of all scientific papers monitored in all the sciences. And so that's a big honor. And so hopefully Google will not censor you or shut you down or shut you up. I don't think they're going to, no one's going to shut you up, but you certainly have a forum here anytime you'd like to come forward and share your information with our audience. Thank you very much, Robert Epstein.
Thank you, Dr. Nelly. I really appreciate it.
All the best. We're out of time, everyone. So trying to bring you information that makes a difference. Thank you all for listening and have a nice day.